Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Hello there, good to be with you on this Easter Sunday night. It's a season that fits well with the Northern Hemisphere, linked as it is with the old spring festivals and the coming of new life. Here in the South, the natural resonances are not so apparent. Drought and death, we understand. Green hills and pleasant lands are somewhere else to be found. Some see our culture reflecting that sensibility, that this may be a Good Friday country, its harshness and ruggedness promising little. New life is a struggle brought home powerfully for many over the past three seasons of fire and flooding rains. Yet here too, for our guests this evening, is promise. Those who deal with the darkest of human tragedies, unmerited suffering. Chaplains. Whether at the front line with the military, police, fire and ambulance services, or as visitors to prisons and hospital wards, chaplains and chaplaincy services provide both practical service and confront ultimate questions. The purpose to both reconnect with life and, if necessary, assist in facing death. What then of chaplains in an increasingly secular world? For services and institutions ill-equipped to deal with the ultimate questions, are they the repository for the awkward bits of humanity around the edges of tragedy, bits that don't fit the manual? For institutional religion, are chaplains a way of avoiding dealing with humanity outside the church, a sort of subcontractor to the faith, not central to the mainstream of religious practice? And then what of the chaplains themselves? How are they redefining their roles? On the boundary between faith and doubt, secular society and institutional religion, helping face life and death questions every day? Well, next week, Compass on ABC Television begins a series on hospital chaplaincy. And tonight, on Sunday night, joining me to tease out the answer to this and perhaps some other questions along the way, Pastor Carl Aiken, Baptist chaplain to Women's and Children's Hospital in Adelaide, Dr. Craig Campbell, the Assistant State Manager for the Victorian Council of Churches Emergencies Ministry, the Reverend Cheryl Holmes, Chief Executive Officer of the Healthcare Chaplaincy Council of Victoria, and Rabbi Jeffrey Cohen, Senior Visiting Fellow at the School of Medicine at the University of New South Wales and past President of the Association of Mental Health Clergy. Welcome to you all.
Good evening.
Good evening, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Good to be with you, John.
Carl Aiken, let me come to you first. What are the public expect of chaplains these days? I mean, so faith communities seem to have taken a great plunge since the 1960s, yet chaplains still hang on. Do the public still expect chaplaincy services? What's thought of them? What are they asking for?
John, that's a good question. I think probably a very brief observation about the way I do my work in the hospital. It's very much a walking around the wards and engaging with people probably more at the crisis end of situations in intensive cares and places like that. And the overwhelming sense is one of welcome. I think people in those crisis moments are looking to explore some of the answers, and for me, that means doing a spiritual or pastoral assessment with them as we engage and listen to their story and listen to what they're seeking. And often it's a sense of somebody who will listen, who has the time to do that, but also who will sit with them and not necessarily give quick answers to their situations, but sit with them in that dark place. And at the same time, I think, bring a presence of God to that.
So it's not necessarily, and Cheryl and Craig and Jeffrey, I'd ask you to come in here, it's not necessarily a capital R religious role.
I think it's long gone that it's been a capital R religious role. The reality is that many years ago, chaplaincy was usually done by the local priest, minister, rabbi, as part of their church duties of the local congregation. Now it's become much more professional. That there's been a move much more to an idea away from denomination specific to discipline specific. So you'll find chaplains who specialize, say, on oncology or mental health. So there are different sorts of chaplaincy, so it's much different from what it was, say, 50 years ago.
Cheryl?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And Jeffrey, certainly here in Victoria, the majority of people working in chaplaincy, or as we more often call them, pastoral care roles here in health facilities, are actually employed by the institutions themselves rather than being appointed and employed by faith communities going in as visitors. They actually form part of the multidisciplinary team.
Craig Campbell.
Emergencies Ministries forms a bit of a counterpoint here to all of this. We work with the general public and with people who are affected by disaster. This may include the emergency services, but generally focuses upon the general public affected by a flood or a fire or a motor vehicle accident.
So what are they looking for in that circumstance, Craig? Are they looking for somebody who's going to give them the food voucher or somebody who's going to sort of say, God be with you and, you know, bear up?
There's usually a question in their face when they see us coming. We're badged with a tabard that identifies us in some way, but the content they don't understand, but they discover in the doing. So we don't seek to give many words of explanation. We do what it is we do, which is come alongside a person, give them space to be with another person at a time that their world is upside down, and facilitate them in finding their particular story in this event.
I would rephrase that in a sense of talking about ministry of presence. You are present with them, whatever's going on in their life. So sometimes it may be a prayer. Sometimes it may be holding their hand. Sometimes it's silence, just being sitting next to them, that they just know there's somebody there who cares. And sometimes, yes, trying to find a food voucher can also be important.
Mm. Are you finding... Yeah, Cheryl, sorry.
I was just going to say, I certainly think Craig's point about story, though, is a really important one. That sense of people actually in the midst of chaos being able to find something about themselves again that enables them to hold a sense of identity, and that comes with being able to tell the story however many times that might need to be told.
I guess for you, Cheryl, and for Craig, this is a particular point in seeing that the last 2 years have seen the dreadful bushfires in Victoria, devastating, which reawakened to many of the general public the role of chaplains, because they saw people going into the communities, and I think we saw more church services and memorials services on television in that period than we had for 20 years in one
absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
And but people, are looking for a way to understand what has happened to them.
But the danger of that is also, by talking about the church service, you're talking about the tip of the iceberg. It's the obvious thing we do, but it's not the most important thing we do.
And if I can offer the second counterpoint for the emergencies ministries, it is that most of our work is carried out by trained volunteers. The professionals in our organisation are just two or three of us. Recently a multi-faith project officer, but myself and one other coordinating 1,500 volunteers across the state who are ready on short notice to be deployed into an emergency setting and come alongside people, as we've heard. Silence is a good tool. Sometimes a bottle of water is a good engagement. But it's really to help a person make sense of their story so that that story remains as part of their life, not the centre of their life.
Cheryl,
that's really the target.
Cheryl, you're one of those who, through healthcare chaplaincy, would have encountered the fires in a particular way, that is, the physical damage after the fires.
Certainly not myself directly, John, because I work as a CEO of an organisation that is actually about developing pastoral care services in the health sector. My role has been more to bring together the healthcare chaplains who have been trained actually through the Victorian Emergencies Ministry program and who are then available. Certainly some of our chaplains in the hospitals, our pastoral carers, were brought face to face with people coming in into emergency departments and into intensive care units and burns units. The presence that's important in those moments, the actual, as I go back again, to that sense of story when life has been ripped apart, that sense of actually being able to hold a sense of yourself and someone who actually provides the space and the container in which that for that to happen.
Carl Aiken, you're one of those of you and I and others who stand aside and watch something like the Victorian bushfires, but nevertheless your experience would take you through the Baptist Church into the way chaplains work in certain circumstances. One of the things that's an interesting puzzle for people is when you see an emergency, you see a chaplain or somebody attached to the social services dimension of chaplaincy quite often, as has been indicated, giving out the bottle of water or assigning food vouchers and things like that. And that seems a million miles away from the in-depth life or death significance that these events hold for many people. How is the glass of water or the cup of water linked to the life and death discussion?
I think, John, that the sense of something practical is always helpful. And it's interesting, if I go back to when I was doing pastoral ministry in the church and there was a crisis, it was interesting that the cup of tea was almost becomes a sacred and a communion with people. It's a connection where people have a sense that we can do some business here. As people show care through, and you've used the bottle of water as that example, there is that connection and communion, and people can begin to have the conversation. And I think we're right about story. I think people's narrative is, in that story, they find the things that have sustained them in the past and rediscover them for the present. So I think that bottle of water or whatever it be, I guess when I think about my work in the hospital, it's a cup of coffee. I spend most of my day drinking coffee with families and staff because that's the way you have those conversations.
You're on Sunday Night around Australia. John Cleary with you. We'd like to invite your calls, 1300 800 222. We're talking about chaplaincy in all its varied dimensions. If you've got some comments, do feel free to give us a ring, 1300 800 222. Dr. Craig Campbell, I interrupted.
In chaplaincy, increasingly, I think we're recognised as part of a continuum of care. My understanding, we're seeing this in the professional health setting, but increasingly, we're finding that space within the emergency response, that the emotional, spiritual care, as we describe it, that we offer, is finding a place that language is as well, actually, in the emergency management language. Emotional spiritual care is part of a holistic response. It begins in what the person needs. And our training focuses around, don't assume you know. Mm-hmm. Ask, find out what it is the other person needs. It often starts with a bottle of water, but it generally leads to a place of meaningful conversation.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add something there. I think the reality is it doesn't matter which area you're in, whether it's prisons, the military, emergency services, the hospital, there is this unique need. And there's been a shift away from just the specific medical model, as it used to be called. Somebody once said it was the biopsychosocial model, which somebody said, oh, no, it's now the biopsychosocial spiritual model, that there are four dimensions to the person. And that fourth dimension starts to be that holistic care. Admittedly, medicine for a long time thought religion was nonsense. And now there's an attitude which is more like, you know, maybe we should know how that person's faith has helped them in the past through crises, rather than seeing it as Freud would call it, a psychosis.
I'd like to come back to that issue in more detail in just a couple of minutes. But let me ask another question now, and that goes to the question that's been teased out in everything each of you have said, that you see the role of the chaplain that was traditionally a associated with capital R religion is now being associated with a more, diffuse is perhaps the wrong word, a more small R religion or spirituality. But But the question that then presents itself is how chaplains then are seen by the faith communities that they represent, because most chaplains still have very specific connections, that is, appointments from faith communities. So is this a changing challenge, Carl Aiken?
John, look, I'm very closely connected with both my local church and the Baptist Church is a very loose connection in some ways with association-type membership, but I'm very closely connected to both my local church, Baptist Community Services, who I have a connection with, and the Baptist Union in South Australia. That's one of the things that also sustains me in what I do, as well as that connection. And, yeah,
but do they see you in a sense as a sort of, look, you're the spiritual problem solver. That is, our job is to get on with building the church. And this chaplaincy stuff, well, we need to do it. So let's appoint someone to go over there and do it, you know, and that takes care of that. That puts it in that little pocket and gets rid of those the annoying things we have to do for the public.
Generally speaking, I'd describe chaplains as on a missional interface between the church and the world. And they're somewhat detached in that. So many churches are, in fact, focused on survival, on growth of their own life, and chaplains sit somewhere between the church and the world. Churches also have their professional agencies of care, but that's not quite chaplaincy, although they contain chaplains. The explicit connection with spirituality in the world often happens through chaplains.
I'd like to give you two responses to that question. First of all, about 50 years ago, a colleague of mine once said to me, in the old days, what we did was we sent our weakest to our most vulnerable, which I think reflected where chaplaincy was. It was, oh, we don't know what to do with so-and-so, let's make him a chaplain or her a chaplain.
Yes.
That's long gone, thank God. But the other thing is, one of my teachers once said, the problem with chaplaincy is the chaplains are the gargoyles of the church. And then I said, what do you mean by the gargoyles? He said, it's a very interesting structure. When you think about it, most people, when they want to look at the church, they want to look inside the building. The gargoyles are on the outside. They're part of the structure, but they're looking out into the community. They're, in a sense, almost a barometer of what's going on. 65% of Australians say they are either not Christian or have no faith. And yet there's still demands for the use of spiritual caregivers, even though they do not everybody wants it.
So the value of chaplaincy for and to the church is not recognised. If you take that analogy, the gargoyles, they're there on the outside and they're ornamental, but they're not really to do with the function inside.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And there are many communities which struggle with that. I think the best thing that's probably happened to chaplaincy or spiritual care has been the emergence of women clergy, because so often they wanted a different sort of ministry. And some of the really good people ended up in chaplaincy. So we moved from this horrible weakest to the most vulnerable into high-quality leadership. So it became seen as a positive to be a chaplain.
Cheryl,
I think
segue to you.
I think Craig is right that there is a survival mentality within the faith communities. And I mean, the financial climate everywhere is really difficult, and it is so for the churches and faith communities as well. So while I agree with you, Jeffrey, that there is a struggle to often see the value, there is also, I think, a deep seeing of the need within the wider community and wanting to connect with that and deeply wanting to share the compassion of God with the wider community, seeing chaplaincy as a way of doing that, but juggling that whole where do you put the finances and how do you continue to support a ministry outside of the church when the churches are struggling to support the ministries within?
What about, I'll give you a couple of practical examples. Prison chaplains. Somebody might be doing some good work with some prisoners and a prison chaplaincy role. Those guys come out of church,
come out of prison, the church is not too sure where it wants, which congregation it would be feel comfortable with them being a part of.
Which takes us back to the gargoyle imagery, which in my memory was there in part to keep the alien spirits out.
I thought it was just to get rid of the water.
Sometimes the people exiting prison are simply too alien for the church to cope.
Can I add to that?
Drug and alcohol problems.
Or mental health problems.
Mental health, yes.
Yeah. I spent 15 years as a mental health chaplain. Yeah. And one of the problems we always had was trying to connect our patients back into the community. We set up a program. It was quite good. But it was required the social workers to make the connection. So we'd say to them, well, what are you going to do? Oh, we'll connect them in the local church. And then about 3 weeks later, they come back and say, oh, it's not working. I'd say, well, what church did you connect them into? Oh, the local Baptist church. Well, what faith community was the person? Roman Catholic. Have you thought this through? But that's the sort of mistake they make.
And is it the Roman Catholic community that welcomes people in this particular case?
That may be another question.
Within faith, that's right.
But what I'm also saying is that there's also a need to be appropriate to the needs of the person in connecting them into the community. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that often fails. Yeah. We've been talking about the difference between chaplains, both paid and unpaid, and Craig's alluded to the volunteers, and Cheryl and I are much more interested, or been more interested in the professionalisation. The reality is, in a lot of places, there's still volunteers. It doesn't matter whether it's in a hospital, whether it's in the emergency services, even in the prisons. There's still volunteers, and there is a place for volunteers as part of the spiritual care of people. It shouldn't be so professionalised that we become like the doctors of the world.
Yes, and volunteers bring a quality of their own, along with a set of problems at times, but a quality of their own out of their own free giving.
Yeah, and I think, as you would find in the emergency ministries, it's the importance of the sort of education and training and ongoing support and supervision for volunteers that's important.
So that they do no harm and so that they learn to do really well in what they do.
On Sunday night, we're talking about chaplains. If you've had any experience of chaplaincy and you'd like to give us a ring, 1300 800 222 is the number, 1300 800 222, wherever you are around Australia. Carl, you've been listening to that. You gave us the first observation, then you've listened quietly. Did you want to barge in at any point?
I'll have a say if I think there's a point. But I actually did agree with what's being said about, and I think especially the point that Jeffrey made about when we're dealing with vulnerable people, they need to be assured that the people that are caring for them are people who have an expertise and a quality of care about them. And probably one of the good things about health is the ICD health codes by the World Health Organization step through a number of things that chaplains do. So there's a sense, first of all, of that pastoral assessment that I mentioned earlier, so that you're actually looking to work with people at their point of need, not the chaplain's agenda. And I think that's really important in terms of caring for people, that it's about them, not us as chaplains. We're there to journey with them, but not be them and not lead them in a sense. They've got to find their own way.
You're taking us into another area, which perhaps we could usefully talk about now, and that is the way in which chaplains, as you've all said, have increasingly come specialised themselves and even specialised down towards specific areas, not just hospital chaplains, but oncology chaplains, as you, Jeffrey, mentioned. And Carl, you usefully mentioned then the ICD codes, which concern the classification of diseases. And that there is a need there, at the beginning of a need, to recognise that within the various codes that operate, spirituality is a legitimate element. Whether or not you believe in God is in some ways irrelevant to the question of spirituality.
There are two studies that come to mind when you talk about that. One was a series of studies done about DSM-4, which is a diagnostic manual, which was for psychiatry. DSM was the fourth incarnation. And when they finally got around to doing it, they put a code in there, and it was a hint. It said spiritual distress. It did not talk about spiritual strengths, and it was what they call a V code. And V codes are non-reimbursable. And between those two statements, I told you already what the American Psychiatric Association, which leads the world because that's what everybody uses, the variation of the ICD codes. The other one was a study done by a guy called David Larson of DSM-3, and he found every time spirituality was mentioned in DSM-3, it was in a negative context. So it tells you, again, that we need to rethink it. Now, in the ICD-11, which is due out in 2015, there's a new category called ICF, International Classification of Functioning. And within that, there is spirituality.
So you're seeing now professional bodies, secular professional bodies, beginning to recognize, if not religion and God, certainly spirituality as a legitimate area of human conceptual concern.
And you can see that in the standards that are being promulgated in health, in aged care. Jeffrey mentioned mental health and also the acute sector, the increasing mention of the need to actually take into account people's spiritual needs. As Carl said, do the spiritual assessment and actually follow up on the spiritual needs.
The danger here is that who does it? It's been acceptable for a long time that it doesn't have to be chaplains. There have been others who may have been doctors. So, for instance, if you go into the social work literature, you go into the psychological literature, these professional bodies now have areas for social work and spirituality. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for the people's spirituality, it's to talk about how they do spirituality with their clients. It'd be like me doing medicine. I'd be invading the doctor's prerogative. And I think there's a danger here that it's going to become acceptable for everybody to play with it rather than talking about people who are specially trained in understanding it.
Mm. And I think that's where we get to the different levels at which we offer spiritual care, because in the end I think we all are able to offer spiritual care to one another, and it's those different levels of need. I mean, we began before with the bottle of water, but then when you get to the point of actually talking through a crisis situation and getting to the deep issues, confronting someone about how they actually make sense of whatever the event is that's happened in life, I think that takes somebody with some more specialised skills.
Do we still have a case where institutions that take on chaplaincies, don't necessarily employ them, but certainly allow them to function within their organisations, see chaplaincy in a bit way the counterpoint that the institution of the church may in its weaker moments? That is, these are people that we just need to fill in the awkward bits, the bits that we don't take care of, the bits that fill in the cracks, and we tolerate them.
The boxes.
Yeah,
so we can tick the boxes. Yes. Yeah, we provide spiritual care.
So is that still there? It's sort of discomforted, you know, we keep them behind the door and we let them out when people have gone home.
I see signs of an increasing inclusiveness there as part of professional teams and part of a comprehensive continuum of care, that the spiritual is increasingly being recognised, and other organisations and agencies are looking for the people well equipped to do that.
John, I think actually it's also a question of the state you're in, which makes vast differences. Victoria is very different from New South Wales. Mm. But I also, just a joke, that the chaplain or the spiritual caregiver was the person of last resort. Nothing else has worked. Oh, what the hell, we'll let the chaplain get in the pace.
It is interesting because the last 10 years I've been working with managements within the hospitals in particular, to talk about how they might develop pastoral care services. And originally I would have to spend a lot of time talking about the validity of spiritual care and why you would want to do it. I actually, that conversation has now changed, and on the whole, people who are employing bodies and the institutions are really receptive to the notion of spiritual care. The bottom issue is always funding.
Yes, isn't that a paradox, though, that with the collapse of religious observance, formal religious observance in society, people are prepared to recognise at all sorts of level the notion that there is a spiritual component to every person.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
And it is good. And when that recognition comes without the necessary and constrained forms, well, without constrained forms that necessarily attach to it, what I'm saying badly there is that when they see spirituality as assisting people in finding meaning, in finding hope and understanding in what's going on. External agencies welcome us into that space where we do it well. They embrace what we do, and when they see us doing it well, they create more space for us to be there. When it comes attached to particular religious form, they're less open.
You're on Sunday night, 1-300-800-222, the number to call if you'd like to share some observations about chaplaincy with our guest, Pastor Carl Aiken, the chaplain of the Women's and Children's Hospital in Adelaide, Dr. Craig Campbell, Assistant State Manager for the Victorian Council of Churches Emergencies Ministry, the Reverend Cheryl Holmes, Chief Executive Officer of Healthcare Chaplaincy of the Healthcare Chaplaincy Council of Victoria, and Rabbi Geoffrey Cohen, Senior Visiting Fellow at the School of Medicine at the University of New South Wales, past President of the Association of Mental Health Clergy, and many other things amongst them all. Let's take a couple of calls. Jill in Golden Beach. Hello, Jill. Welcome to the program. What would you like to say?
I'd like to say I am a social worker. I work in aged care and palliative care and have worked in mental health for many years. Without being too precious, I think most social workers do know the difference between a Baptist and a Catholic.
I wish you'd worked for me back then.
But, you know, I think, you know, social workers get enough bad press. So, you know, we're on the margins. The chaplains are on the margins. I think that's where we belong. So let's make space for each other there. I think that's the thing I'd like to say.
There was an undercurrent of bagging social workers you picked up, was there?
Well, you know, it's very common. And, you know, we do gooders rather than do badders. And I think we should be applauded for that, probably.
I think the really interesting thing, Jill, is that there has often been a... Oh, I'm just getting feedback, so that sounds funny.
Try and talk over it, Cheryl.
I am. I will. There has been a lot of turfed, you know, claiming territory between social workers and chaplains in the past, and trying to get those boundaries has caused some difficulties. But I think when it works well and when there's genuine respect and a sense of actually... we're both providing support services and there's more than enough work to go around. We can actually work really well together.
Jill, are there legitimate boundary issues? Do you think there are some people who are sufficiently unskilled in the chaplaincy areas to not be aware of where a social worker is more appropriate?
I haven't worked with many chaplains. I've had the very good fortune of having worked with two excellent chaplains in Blue Care, which is the organisation I work for. They had to earn their stripes like I have to earn mine, you know. Mm-hmm. We all have to show what we can do and then respect what we do. I've also known other chaplains who just seem to be setting themselves up in business. So, you know, it varies, you know. You find a good one, you stick to them, don't you, I think?
I think we all do that when we find a good practitioner, whatever trade we're working in. We very quickly put them on our list of first dial.
And I think there's more than enough turf to go around, you know, really. Yeah,
so. Jill, thanks for your observations.
Thank you.
Jill, a social worker at Golden Beach. Let's go to Margaret in Perth. Hello, Margaret. Welcome to you. What would you like to say?
John, I just have the most absolute admiration, and I certainly welcome the chaplain to come and talk to me when I'm in hospital, which I have been several times in the past 4 years, and I find they're absolutely spot on, and it's just such a comfort to have them. Their understanding, regardless of whether they represent any denomination. I'm a practicing Christian, and I welcome them all, and I do find it invaluable. As a matter of fact, my daughter is in Melbourne and she has just taken on the CPE course at the Alfred Hospital and is absolutely loving it.
Oh, wonderful.
She won a scholarship to do the course for a year. Or two semesters.
I think we're actually raising a very interesting point. One of the men who started chaplaincy as a profession was a man called Granger Westberg. He started off at Lutheran General Hospital in Chicago. When he started there in the late 40s, his CEO said to him, "I want you to visit every patient once every 2 days," at which stage he calculated it allowed him about 2.5 minutes per patient, which he politely said no.
Sounds like the criteria applied to our sort of organisation. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that.
I thought it was how much time you got allowed per GP. But then there's been other studies that's showing probably a good chaplain will only see a certain percentage of the population. Yes. If he has good, he or she has good relationship with the staff, they will point him to or her to the person who needs to be seen desperately, and out of that will come maybe half an hour, maybe an hour. It's really a lot of time to do good chaplaincy.
Margaret, has your daughter said to you why she's decided to go with the course at the Alfred? And
She's been working with a hospice, and she is a very spiritual girl, and she feels now that she's going home. She's home. That this is what she really wants to do, and the good Lord has been leading her towards this for a number of years.
Can I give a plug for Cheryl's program? Because Cheryl has a very good multi-faith program. It has Jews, it has Buddhists, it has Catholics, it has other Christians. It's really fascinating. It means that they get to share and learn from each other as well as just learning how to deliver services.
Margaret, thanks for your call. We'll take another call from Robin in the New South Wales South Coast. Hello, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
We're getting around the country tonight. We're fine.
Yes, I just wanted to add a perspective from the prison chaplaincy that we're involved in.
Yep.
And it is paid work, and in New South Wales we have a very good support from the corrective services to provide funding to pay chaplains, and certainly that's enabled people to be able to specialise in that area. And the religious side of it, worship services, giving people a Bible, things like that, is part of the role and an essential part of the role, but it's not the major part of the role.
So do you see, in some ways, chaplaincy as, let me use the crudest word, proselytisation?
No. That is a forbidden practice. In corrective services, and we have to, and we are willing to work across faiths in the prison system, and there's a mutual respect extended there, and it's more about, we can specialise with people in a faith tradition, because we are identified with that faith tradition, but we are a chaplain for all in that environment, staff, and the inmates. And so we then specialise in the areas of lifestyle programs or dealing with addictive behaviours, grief and loss. And so it's not just simply, you know, with God botherers, as people do call us, but it gives a whole new dimension. And yes, you're right, we are on the margins. People look at us and say, well, look, I'm glad you're in there, but please don't bring people out here into our church community, because we're nice and comfortable and we don't really think they have a place here.
But the NIMBY syndrome, I think it's referred to as.
Is it?
Yeah, not in my backyard.
Yes, that's right. But we've found that as part of the spiritual dimension of the human person, there's an awful lot of research done in the American prison systems on the effect of, when you add the spiritual dimension, the increased spiritual well-being to people, why they're here on earth, what is the purpose of life, what meaning does it have for them, why things happen to them.
And this can be done easily without proselytising.
Yes, oh, for sure, because it's we're all... it's part of the human condition.
It's a bit like
faith tradition you raised in.
Yeah, it's a bit like the 12 steps model with AA.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah.
And there's evidence of reduced criminal thinking and distress when we develop that spiritual well-being in people.
It's interesting you raise the AA model, because usually they don't bring the chaplain or the spiritual caregiver until like step five or step six, and yet when you look at it, the first step requires you to recognize a supreme being.
Yes, that's exactly
so
right.
So it's an absurd model when it comes to implication and how it's applied at that level.
Yes, certainly. So I just wanted to say that you know, we certainly work across faiths, and we certainly do focus on religious side as an aspect of our role, but it's a much wider than that, you know, developing, you know, a positive self-image.
Robert, thanks for that.
Okay.
All the best. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let me raise an awkward question. We've only got a few minutes to go. To what extent has the whole kerfuffle about school chaplaincy and the government's funding of it, and you know, people argument, and it's going to the High Court, or it's in the High Court at the moment, muddied the waters on this issue? Because one of the critiques of the whole school chaplaincy issue is funded by the federal government. It required both sides to turn a blind eye to what the other was doing. That is, the government was saying sort of no proselytisation, yet the very word chaplain for many people carried the overtone of recruiting people for a faith tradition, and yet those going into it, particularly some who took the contracts, were representing organisations that had proselytisation as part of their mandate.
John,
so did that muddy the whole debate? Did it create problems?
Certainly, John, there's no question that proselytising can happen in bad chaplaincy. I think good chaplaincy is characterised by a particular way of working, and I would describe it in the language of power with rather than power over. And in power with, we come alongside a person. We facilitate something that's already in them. We work with them. The power over is doing something for, to, or at another person. And when chaplaincy becomes like that, it's lost its quality of goodness.
Geoffrey Cohen, let me ask you here. In the school chaplaincy issue, one of the critiques was these people were very loosely qualified.
And I think you're raising a very important point. In fact, Cheryl's probably a better person to answer this than I am. But there's two parts. There's standards and there's competencies. What are the standards that we expect for the person who is appointed? So it just can't be, somebody who's a nice guy. And secondly, competence. What skills do they need to be able to deliver those services? We've seen it to emerge in Victoria, and it's now starting to emerge in a group called Spiritual Care Australia, which is the overriding body for chaplaincy, primarily in healthcare, but reaching out to other groups. But the competencies is a very important part, and I think that's where the federal government failed. It said, here's some money, go employ the person, and don't care.
Mm. Cheryl.
Yeah, I mean, we have done a lot of work on developing, we call it a capabilities framework here in Victoria. I agree totally with Geoffrey, that sense of actually having to name the standards both for education and training and for practice is absolutely essential.
And evaluation of that practice.
Exactly. And I think one of the unfortunate things around the whole school chaplaincy saga was, and it was a saga here in Victoria, was that there was it became very blurred around the difference between those providing religious instruction and those who were actually employed in school chaplaincy. And
then on the other side, those between chaplaincy and counsellors.
Exactly. But there was a lot of muddying around what they were actually talking about and who they were talking about. But the issue of having very clear standards and capabilities, competencies around practice is something that we take very seriously in the health sector.
And I would add to that the attitude that a person comes with. So it's their skills and capacities and competencies, but it's also what's motivating them. Why are they there in the first place?
Yeah, that's true.
And if it's a grab for influence, place, position, authority, it ends up badly. If it's a willingness to come alongside equally with a ministry of presence, simply being there, it ends up differently.
And there's another piece to that, and that's the whole question of continuing to develop in your professional competencies. as well as being prepared to be supervised, so that you're transparent in what you do and you have people who sit with you and encourage you to do better. And sometimes point out the flaws, but also celebrate the good things you do. And I think that that idea of professional development and supervision is incredibly important to any chaplain.
Time for one other brief call on Sunday night to Phil at Sunbury in Melbourne. Hello, Phil. Welcome.
Hi. This is one of the best programs of the week every week. Someone just alluded to the word that I believe makes the biggest difference between a social worker and a chaplain, and I think that is the word presence. I certainly believe, having suffered depression myself, but also knowing many people that have been injured, work cover, palliative care, and even children, it's the presence of someone rather than the social worker who is the person that is, say, organising various things. For instance, if you are on work cover in Victoria, you might get a social worker. You might, but you'll never get a chaplain. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the failings of various systems, particularly in Victoria, where we've had this fight about chaplaincy, but it's all about rewarding mediocrity. And I really believe that chaplaincy has to be someone that has been consecrated to God in some way, whether as a nun or as a special minister of the Eucharist or similar. But I'd hate to be in a position of anyone on work cover or TAC at the moment. Whereas, you know, when you look at the Jimmy Steins thing, what a wonderful, wonderful, what would be the right word, for palliative care. The way he was treated.
We're going to have to break it off there, Phil, because we've run out of time.
That's
it's
right.
Been great to have you all in the studio this evening. Carl Aiken of the Women's and Children's Hospital in Adelaide, Craig Campbell,
thanks,
Assistant State Manager for Victoria of the Church's Emergency Ministries, Reverend Cheryl Holmes, Chief Executive Officer of Healthcare Chaplaincy Council Victoria, and Rabbi Jeffrey Cohen, Senior Visiting Fellow at the School of Medicine at the University of New South Wales. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, John.
It's been great to have you all, and we'll be back after the news. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.